Covenant at Sinai. Israel then left Egypt with no illusions as to the moral implications of their calling. God had clearly announced his object in redeeming them. I will take you to be to me for a people, and I will be to you a God. The final step was now to secure their assent to that purpose with all its implicit demands upon them for obedience, total and absolute. They were brought to Sinai for that purpose. Moses ascended the holy mount. First of all, God instructed him to remind them of the facts, the historical proof in the Exodus that he was faithful. "Seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself." Secondly, they were offered full covenant privileges on the condition that they, on their part, gave an oath of loyalty as a nation to God. "Now, therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." Moses reported to the people, and they at once professed full readiness to accept both the privileges offered them and the duties attached thereto. All the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord hath spoken, we will do." A preparation was then made for the formal ratification of the covenant on a national basis. Symbolism entered largely into this. Uncleanness on the part of the people was assumed, that is, unworthiness by them to appear in the presence of God was regarded as axiomatic. So they were first instructed to purify themselves in preparation. As a further reminder that they were actually still estranged from God, despite all that he had of late done for them, a fence had to be built around the mount to keep them from God when he came down upon it. So scrupulously were they to avoid touching the mount that if they were compelled to kill any straying animal or disobedient person who did so, they were to avoid even indirect contact with it by using stones or darts to inflict death upon the animal or individual concerned. Truly, they were as yet far from God. All preparations completed, God duly manifested himself amid scenes of terror. First came the symbol, the voice of the trumpet, then the reality, the voice of God, summoning Moses to receive final instructions to ensure further that none touched the mount, as final witness that as yet the people were not reconciled to him. Then the voice of God sounded forth. The Ten Commandments, the quintessence of his demands upon them. And they confessed their state of alienation by fleeing in terror and demanding the appointment of Moses as mediator between them and God. Moses answered, "Fear not, for God is come to prove you, that his fear may be before your faces, that ye sin not." Moses then approached God as mediator and received the basic laws of the covenant for the regulation of their community life. And Moses recounted these laws to the people, and once more they pledged obedience. All the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which the Lord has said will we do." Their official representatives stood meanwhile worshipping God afar off, they not having authority to draw near like Moses. The ratification of the covenant need now no longer be delayed. They knew perfectly well to what they were committing themselves by entering into it, so Moses recorded the words for permanent reference, and on the morrow he built an altar according to the specifications he had received, specifications which had the design of making the altar in every way representative of God and in no sense of man. Beside it he reared 12 pillars, these being representative of man and, as their number indicated, of the 12 tribes in particular. Here in symbol, God and man stood in proximity. Burnt offerings and peace offerings were then sacrificed, and Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. Thus God, as represented by the altar, entered into the covenant on his part, and that significantly first. The recorded laws were then read in the audience of the people, and they said, "All that the Lord hath said will we do and be obedient." The people, having thus for the third time pledged obedience, Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, Behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words. At once the situation changed fundamentally. No longer did their appointed representative stand afar off as a token that the people were estranged from God. The fence around the mount was now down. Then went up Moses and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. Approach to God was possible at last. And upon the nobles of the children of Israel he laid not his hand. The people, having thus pledged themselves to total dedication to God's service, symbolized by the burnt offerings, there followed a sacrificial meal of fellowship enjoyed on the basis of the covenant, symbolized by the peace offerings. Also they saw God and did eat and drink. Thus Israel nationally became in a full sense the covenant people, so that Moses could say, For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. In telling them this, Moses was careful to stress that this was not on account of right or merit, but solely on account of the faithfulness of God. They had promised to be likewise faithful. They were to realize then what disobedience would mean. God would not spare those who played fast and loose with his covenant. Thou shalt therefore keep the commandments. All manner of ritual ordinances bore in upon them the stringency of their duty to keep these commandments. The regulation of their flesh eating reminded them that they, as God's people, were to the heathen what the clean animal was to the unclean, and taught them that they, being his, had to be holy like him. So also with their clothing, it could not be of mixed cloth, part wool, part linen, thereby symbolizing that they had to be wholly his, not half like him and half like heathendom around them. Any form of hybrid spirituality was abhorrent to God and forbidden to them, as they were reminded symbolically in several ways. Ox and ass, clean and unclean, were not to be yoked together, either literally or figuratively. The ribbon and fringe on their garments, the inscriptions on their doorposts, were to remind them of the tremendously significant fact, I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. The covenant was ever to be in their minds. No sacrifice or offering could be burnt upon the altar without the salt of the covenant. Salt preserved from corruption was a fitting symbol, both of the enduring nature of the covenant and of the righteousness and purity which it demanded. Its presence in every offering reminded them that the privilege of worship was one which could only be enjoyed on the basis of covenant relationship to God. The tragedy of Israel's history is that they were forced to their oath. On that account, Yahweh, though essentially a merciful God, had perforce in vindication of his essential holiness to be to them a consuming fire, even a jealous God, and was forced repeatedly to avenge the quarrel of my covenant. Yet where they have failed, God still remains true to himself, and his purpose remains unaltered. God declared, I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God. That intention, like all of God's intentions, will be realized in fact for all Israel's past failure. Their failure merely throws his constancy into relief. Yet for all that, when they be in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, neither will I abhor them to destroy them utterly and to break my covenant with them, for I, the Lord, am their God. But I will, for their sakes, remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the heathen, that I might be their God. Israel will yet attain their ideal destiny, like the rest of mankind, and be in reality a holy people. For the Lord hath chosen thee to be a peculiar people unto himself, above all the nations that are upon the earth. True of the past, this is also prophetic of the future. For God is faithful and will, as he pledged in the Exodus, bring all his promises to Abraham to pass.